Well, I remember back in the 60s, the Black Panther Party called for community control of police. And that's probably the right agenda. But didn't totally or very much happen at the time, and less so maybe in San Jose. But the kind of beautiful thing that's happening right now in San Jose is that we're starting to get a serious and very low-key movement in that direction, which the Coalition for Justice and Accountability represents. And maybe we have a little bit of revolution to offer people. As Julia said, I've been an activist since the 60s, and I actually live in Berkeley, although I work in San Jose. And, but I want to talk a little bit about my friend Jose and about the work on the coalition, because the coalition involves anti-police activists and people who are trying to defend people like Bea Cautran and Rudy Cardenas and Zain Bojic and Johnny Nakao and people. Even yesterday, somebody in Fremont was tasered to death. That's the latest. But they've also made an extraordinary effort, which history has not seen, and it's related to something which we in the mental health survivors and clients movement call the freedom train, which is that there's an effort to actually include us in the discussion. And that usually we get kind of treated like we're crazy and not really an important part of the discussion. And actually the inspiration in this situation is that a group of us have gotten involved with the Coalition for Justice and Accountability, but on the basis that we're the experts on the mental health issue. Not on the basis that we're just there to be intermediary pawns of some kind. Tokens, I think, is the correct term, right? I got involved with this because I was an instructor at San Jose City College as a mental health client, and I was teaching a course for mental health clients there. And a lot of the initial organizing for the committee actually took place at City College. So I kind of connected with it through that. My friend, I want to talk some about Jose, who is a remarkable person who couldn't make it because of serious medical concerns. I will talk about them too. Jose Rangel is a longtime mental health client activist, mental health and survivor. He's actually an alternate to the board of the California Network right now from the Bay Area. He's born in Mexico, brought up in Los Angeles. In 1970, they had the August 29th Chicano moratorium, and that changed the resistance issues around Chicano liberation. Jose was a high school student, and a couple of years later, they had what are called the high school walkouts in Los Angeles, and he participated in the high school walkouts 1972 period as a high school student. And he went to college, he graduated from Cal State Northridge in Chicano studies. And later, after searching around a lot, he graduated from San Jose State with a master's in Chicano studies. And he started teaching at actually the same community college district that I teach in right now. He taught one class in Mexican American Studies, and then he just started realized, I think, fundamentally how out of touch and I think and you might kind of loosely call insane the situation was, and he walked away from it and ended up homeless. And he's been activist ever since. That was 25 years ago. He spent about 10 years being homeless, and eventually he got involved in the projects in the South County, where they were, South County means Gilroy and Morgan Hill, where they were building a community support system within the conventional nonprofit provider process. It's called Community Solutions. And he became the chief organizer and leader there. This is a very early period. And he ended up, and then they had, because of a situation where county mental health got taken over by someone on a, by a Chicano activist who was simply on an agenda, he ended up on the county mental health board. And when I met Jose, he was the vice chair of the county mental health board for Santa Clara County. And he eventually walked away from it. One day he woke up and he said, you know, they treat me fine as a Chicano here on the board, but they treat me in a discriminatory way as a client. So he quit and he got involved in community organizing in the South Bay, in the South County, and he went through training in community organizing in Morgan Hill. And then as they started to build the self-help movement in the in Santa Clara County, he became the lead person doing the organizing for a Chicano-based self-help movement in Gilroy Morgan Hill, and he's actually the person behind the fact that they have a self-help center in Gilroy today. The other side of this, though, was that Jose is braver than he should be, and he got more involved in the Moctezuma thing. As Peter was pointing out, when they torture you enough, you get into the inner psyche of the of Aztlan and the Chicano background, and ultimately the Chicano psychiatrists at the Community Solutions saw that Jose was needed to be taken down around, because he was telling too much truth and it was producing too much liberation. He was hanging around with too many Zapatistas. And so they knew he had diabetes, so they caught him, so they sort of tricked him into a situation where he got a serious infection, which is very dangerous, so he was suddenly taken to Valley Medical Center and had his foot cut off, which is the normal treatment for that kind of thing. And he spent the last 3 years in a convalescent home near Valley Medical Center, also near where I work, because City College is across the street from Valley Medical Center. I've seen him probably every week, and we've gone to things together and all over the state, and I've taken him everywhere and take him to the Caltrans meetings. And he has played an important role in the Caltrans work consistently, including speaking at events and so forth, and interviewed Peter. When Julia called Richard Conda, who was the attorney from the Asian Law Alliance, who was sort of the organizer for the coalition, Richard already knew from me that Jose was back in the hospital, because basically they told him 2 months ago, they said, man, you're getting better, you're finally healing. They told him originally, take him a year, that it'll heal enough, you can get a prosthesis, you're fine, but 3 years, never heals. You know why? Do you know why it didn't heal? Because Jose, every time this man put up a determined struggle to fight for his own health, it was regarded as a threat to the community because his attitude is too radical. So he was a psychiatrist, broke every effort he made, up to including 5150ing him. I've seen the paper that says he's a danger to others. And I had coffee with him 2 hours after they finally let him out. But basically, I call this the obsidian knife agenda. This is the complexity of the Chicano culture, and the psychiatrists who are Chicano psychiatrists have to solve the problem of maintaining discipline by marching the prisoners up to the top of the pyramid and cutting their knife hearts out. That's the psychiatric way of approaching the situation, and that's what they do with Jose. He's the one who faces that. So he was back in the hospital last month, and after they told him it was getting better, what they meant was that they were now felt that they could get away with cutting off some more of his leg, so that they could rearrange the thing so that they can try again. So Jose is now, after several weeks in the hospital, is now out again, and he has 6 inches less leg. And he's getting very serious about finding a way to stand up to this.
I didn't quite understand with, before they cut off his foot, there was like months or something where they were preventing his healing?
Well, I knew a year, he had diabetes, which is, as you know, a side effect of being
on
his medication. Yes. I can explain
that
to you if you want to hear it.
Okay.
Without getting too personal, but for Jose. But basically, I knew for a year or two beforehand that he had a serious diabetes issue, and which is a side effect of medications, of course, and the consequence of what he was taking. And there's lots of research evidence supporting that. And what they knew was that Jose, in being, they understood it, what you could call a character witness, which is that he was too militant. I mean, could call it the proper term, right? He had an attitude like you or me have an attitude problem.
Okay.
Only they recognized how to exactly manage that so that he would be taken off guard, so that in fact the infection would take over his foot. In other words, they were literally monitoring the situation and managing it.
So they were doing mental control so that he wouldn't take care of his foot?
You could put it like that.
That he wasn't.
All of which is allegations. I mean, there's no proof. There's nobody written down. I just know, followed the whole thing from one end to the other, and Jose would agree with that.
They were upsetting him, and so he wasn't eating in a way that would take care of his foot?
No, they weren't upsetting him. Do you know what it means to organize a community? Have you ever been a door-to-door salesman?
I know how to organize a community,
but
not door-to-door.
Well, right. Well, he had to do it in Joe and Morgan Hill. But ever tried putting your foot in the door?
Yeah.
They basically caught him putting his foot in the door. So they had to do something with the foot.
I was just wondering what they did that caused his diabetes to get to the point where they had to cut off his foot.
Good question. I
don't think
that I can fully respond to that, yes?
I can respond from a personal
perspective.
I have diabetes. I'm on insulin. It's very easy for any doctor to decide, because your medication is failing at the time, to modulate your insulin retirement, to change your neuropathy drugs, and if your blood sugar is not clearly in balance, you definitely experience an exacerbation of your infections. And that's very easy.
Oh, I see. So basically the doctors weren't treating him correctly and allowed the infection to go bad.
No, basically by the rules of the medical system they were treating him correctly, but they have so much latitude that they can make mistakes that are devastatingly awful.
Chronic mistakes. Right. Then it goes
so
bad.
Like she's saying she can make one mistake even though the doctors tell her something and it can ruin her. Now, the doctors, second level is the doctors know
better.
And she knows better and she's smart. Right, but the next level down is the doctors know that game back and forth, because they're involved in the Chicano issue too, so they have a deep critique of the society also.
Okay.
And so that's why it goes back to arguments about climbing the pyramid. Julia?
So I just was thinking it's an interesting connection, but that it's similar, is that there used to be these insulin-induced comas that they would give to mental health patients. So there's kind of like a parallel.
Oh, yeah, this is a new variant.
So they're just letting someone's blood sugar in order to,
yeah, absolutely,
to take the power out of themselves.
And hey, you met Jose, right?
I
you were at the press conference.
Oh, then I met him.
Yeah, because he was there with me. Yeah.
Oh, okay, okay.
Yeah.
And I want to ask them, sometimes do they have people that, like, not undercover people or something, influencing someone and manipulating them in a way that is has a negative influence, where they infiltrator that would purport to be assisting someone and then just add tension to their lives. Have you recognized that in any situation?
You mean things like psychiatrists walking down the hall in the mental health hospital and mental health clinic and saying, "You don't stop that behavior, and I'm going to 5150 you. You watch it." That's an instigation. That kind of thing goes on all the time.
From that to someone who isn't in the hospital, the damage.
Right. No, they'll make those kind of threats, or they'll tease you about your behavior.
Cops.
What are you wearing today? You dressed like that? Maybe we should 5150 you. Yeah.
I mean, if we had a large and powerful movement, we would get infiltrators. I'll give you an example. This is something I know personally. The Black Panther Party tried to organize in San Jose. They organized a work group. One of my next door neighbors in Berkeley was one of the organizers of that, so I know this from her personally, from years later. Eventually, they started to worry about these people, so they put in some infiltrators and they turned it into a bank robbery group. And that's why she walked away from it. She became a parking meter person in Berkeley eventually. But the thing is, and her husband was a bodyguard for Huey Newton, I think. But the point is that if it behooves them, they'll do that. But if we would have to earn it. They're using sort of subtler means that have that impact at the moment, primarily.
I just wanted to mention something where you said that these were Chicano psychiatrists.
Yeah.
And I'm not even going to get into what caused his diabetes problem, because we're all assuming, we're making assumptions, but I don't even know that that's as important to me as when you said they were Chicano psychiatrists. They know that Mr. Rangel is a Chicano who's very out there, and how he needed to be brought down. And this, again, is the issue. These Chicano psychiatrists are being trained. They're getting their degrees from the same schools. They're getting the same continuing education on how you are supposed to treat someone who's mentally ill. And their goal, and it may not even be, we don't even have to impugn bad motives, but is to bring someone into treatment. And it's the same treatment that everyone else gets. They are just taught to use and bring people into the treatment. If this person is outside the norm, he is a threat to psychiatry, to the norm. I know you mentioned that, but that's what I'm really keen into. Having more people of ethnic diversity giving people services may not necessarily be helpful to that person. I'm just raising, I'm such an annoyance. But I'm raising these issues because
right.
I would like
that's
us to
right.
think
it's
about
not,
that.
It doesn't speak against training Chicanos, and probably
no.
a lot of the people
right.
for community it's solutions who are psychiatrists, excuse me. A lot of the people who work at community solutions who are psychiatrists, some of them may be Anglos, but they know that they are working within a environment where the boss is a Chicano for community solutions, so they have to, and the people population they're serving is Chicano population, so they have to be very attentive to that psychology, whether they're part of it or not themselves. But you're right, it's the treatment-driven aspect of it that, as you and I as mental health activists, are very sensitive to the fact that that's fundamentally a problematic of the situation, and it's treatment-driven rather than people-driven. The other side of it, and this is why I think this relates to the concern that Julia brings up about the police in particular, and the prisons, is that Jose is probably one of the most liberation-conscious people you ever meet. He's a liberation theologist and a person of great faith and a person who's has a clear insight into both mental health client issues and the freedom issues. And it's precisely because he is the person who is the biggest challenge to this entire police-dominated control system, the place where, like on the Caltrans committee, we had Rudy Cardenas, we supported his work a lot. The death of Rudy Cardenas, where he was shot down by the police in the back, where they were chasing the wrong person because he was a Chicano. And that's the way they deal. They just got in their attitude, and they finally chased him down and shot him. And because they thought he was a gang person, even though they had evidence that it wasn't, even though the San Jose Police was the Department, State Department of Justice, the San Jose Police was listening on the police radio, and they said, "You guys are out of your minds," you know. They said that to the police chasing him. The kind of police terror that rules the Chicano community is extraordinary. And Jose is simply the person who's so brave and has so much faith that he stands up to it. That is why he's lost his foot, fundamentally. Yeah.
This lady,
I don't know. Yeah, Sharon, I'm sorry for that. That's an intimacy, because I know you too well, but yeah.
You know, what you were talking about is we face the mental health community and therapists certainly do the problem of co-option, that the first people who are going to be pulled through mental health clients to help mental health clients, what they're told is their job is to normalize mental health clients. That's what they're convinced of, and that co-option, I mean, those can be the most damaging people because they're one of us, and when they start saying you can't behave like that or you've got to toe the line or go along to get along, it's very damaging.
Oh, thank you. I can't remember. I was listening to her. I'll bring it up again. I remember. Thank you for your patience. Thank you. that in Richmond, there was something which anything that goes wrong, I immediately look at subversive kind of things connected with it in the system, because they really don't care who they torture or whatever corrupt is rude. And there was a lot of Chicano people in front of outside the city council screaming for more police for safety. And it was like, what is happening here? And my friend just said to me, there's a camera there, and I wasn't trying to get the camera attention, but the people were looking, so I started to, you know, Jesus wouldn't want the system, because I thought that they could hear that. He embraced the people who the system rejected, and he loved them and respected them something and got some attention that way to say, what do we really need? And I tried to present that just to touch people. But I was really surprised at how did it get there to the community screaming for more police in Richmond?
I think I should speak only for a little bit more so that my patriot here has a chance.
I'm sorry that I interrupted.
You're great.
It was an extreme.
The mental health system definitely demoralizes people. And I think sometimes police are needed, like when Maria King was murdered, there were no police around. They seem to be, they're all up in Telegraph Avenue, hassling people instead of being in some neighborhoods where people need them at night.
If I can continue for a couple minutes, as I have a little bit of a concluding perspective I want to show you. And that really has to do with the freedom train, which I think is getting close to what Kathy is talking about. The consequence of the Zain Bojic thing, which is the shooting at Starbucks in Campbell of a Bosnian torture survivor, because they were running, basically the problem there was that they were running about a bunch of Bosnian torture survivors were hanging out at Starbucks, supporting each other because nobody knew how to deal with the reality that they were dealing with. And Naeem and many of them were also mental health clients, and it was bigger than either psychiatry or mental or the police could understand. And that and the Johnny and the Cow thing, where Johnny went 3 times to Valley Medical Center Emergency Psychiatric Services in a single week as a county mental health client, and told them he was decompensating, please let him in, and they refused. And that's when he got shot the next day after that. That sort of inspired the committee to actually take seriously the level of violence we're dealing with, and later on, I think it was in January, we had rearranged a meeting between the Caltrans committee and the people running Valley Medical Center, which is the executive director, the head of emergency psychiatric services, her boss is the head of acute psychiatry, and the county mental health director, and myself and Jose, and another client activist, Robin, and several people from the coalition outside of our group, including Richard. I mean, when the community speaks, people like Richard Conda speak, they have a problem politically. They need to listen because they know that ethnic politics is a big deal in San Jose. And so we actually sat down and talked this thing out directly with them, and we are now working on we are probably working at several levels. We have an ongoing thing right now. We're actually working on a proposal to set up a community dialogue agency as part of the Mental Health Services Act for basically protecting people who are trying to talk to as a community, protect the people who are trying to talk with the psychiatric services, stuff like that. But the thing is that what we are doing is developing a heart connection with the community activists. The same people who, in some sense, morally, are the same people who did the community control of police 40 years ago but couldn't make it work, and we couldn't make that moral connection. Now we are starting to make that moral connection, and that's what I'm the most proud of and the hardest thing to do. I think that's what I have to say. Yeah.